Hello, everyone. Welcome to Paradigm Shifters. And we have a very exciting paradigm shifter with us today. And it's Ron Pevney of the Elder Movement. It's Conscious Aging, Conscious Living is your relatively recent book, but that's not the only place in which you're functioning, Ron. So welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Veronica. It's an honor for me to be with you.
Well, and I'm excited when I read your material and your book. A lot of us that have been working in the consciousness movement for a long time see this book on dealing with conscious aging is actually the epitome of what a lot of us have been trying to do to bring people into the center of their existence for quite a long time. But focusing on it being aging, I think, is wonderful. And you yourself faced, let's just jump to who you are first, and you yourself faced your mortality a while back, didn't you?
Yeah, I did indeed. I guess it was about eight years ago. And prior to then, I guess I in many ways felt that I was probably immortal, like most people do, until they have a with mortality. And then at that point, one realizes that life is incredibly precious, and that no matter what we do to take care of ourselves, you know, and I was doing all the right things, it may well be that in the larger plan for our lives, some kind of a major crisis of some sort or other will emerge. And it did for me. And it was not the diagnosis originally was... let me say it differently. There was a strong possibility that I may have had a serious cancer that could have taken my life, but the way it turned out, that was not the case, and it was just a benign tumor and all is well. But that was probably the biggest, most profound, and far-reaching learning experience of my life in terms of my own personal growth and in terms of, I think, my ability and my credibility in helping others deal with the issues that we face as we age and as we try to age consciously.
So you're saying that it stimulates a sort of a life review, doesn't it? Kind of help you reevaluate things?
It does indeed stimulate a life review. For me, it helped me to become aware of many areas of my life where I had work to do. I had healing work to do. I had forgiveness work to do. I had to deal with some very disempowering stories that I was carrying along with me that, especially in moments of stress, really made me cynical and drained my energy. But the other thing it did is it helped me to see the incredible preciousness of each day.
Oh, that's
wonderful. And I saw in a way that perhaps you can only see when you feel that you may be at the end of your life. I saw how every moment was so precious and how I could not allow myself to live days equivocating about what I am to do, about what my calling is, about how I bring my total self to each moment. It showed me, that crisis showed me that I needed to give my all to what I knew in my deepest being is what I am to do in the remaining years of my life.
Well, were you already a counselor? You were already a social programmer or a social worker or something?
Well, I have spent most of my career, probably about 35 years or so, with my primary calling, as I have seen it, being to help people move through life transition. And for a lot of that time, the mode I used for that wasn't one-on-one counseling, even though I've done some of that, or wasn't coaching, even though I've done some of that, but it is helping people to design and to experience meaningful rites of passage.
Oh, that's
as a way of moving from one life stage to another. And so I've been doing that for many, many years. And it was the case beginning about 13 or 14 years ago that my focus gradually began to shift toward helping people make that important passage from midlife adulthood into the elder chapters, into elderhood. And so that's been my focus for about the last 12 or 13 years.
Well, I'm really excited about it because what I've been doing is watching a lot of older people and thinking, hey, there's a wisdom bank out there. How do we tap it? And then I encountered your information and your wonderful book and seeing that you take people on retreats. I would love you to tell everybody what sort of access do you help people gain to themselves and how can they turn, like you've already had to turn around some of your interpretations of your life in order to give you light as you come to the later parts of your years. I'm assuming you're a little bit older as well. And so I'm just saying, let's talk about what you do with seniors or what you do with the elders to give them what, a charge about getting older, or what would you say? How would you frame it?
Well, first of all, just to set the context, I'm 67 years old.
Okay.
So I consider myself in, if you look at a continuum from early elderhood to later elderhood, and I think there is a continuum, I'm one of this vast number of people who are in the early elder years.
Hmm.
You know, I think that the conscious eldering work we do, and sometimes you hear the term conscious aging instead.
Mm-hmm.
It's in many ways the same kind of thing. Sometimes you hear spiritual eldering. Everybody's trying to figure out what terms are most meaningful these days for this new emerging paradigm of aging.
And also this time in history where we get possibly another 20 years compared to what people used to get, right?
Yeah, 20 or 30, indeed.
Yeah, good grief.
I think the essence of what we teach and help others to learn and experience can be boiled down to four things. And those four things are belief,
okay,
baggage, purpose, and community.
Belief
and
baggage.
Yes, baggage, purpose,
and
community.
Okay.
And would you like me to say a little bit about each one?
Yes, please. I like this.
Okay. As I'm sure that many of your listeners know, what we believe very, very much shapes who we become.
That's true.
And it's unfortunately the case that in modern society, our beliefs about aging are not empowering beliefs in general.
Oh, they sure beliefs, aren't. They're also separating, right?
That's right. That's right. They're beliefs that once we hit retirement age, you know, whether we can retire or not, or want to retire or not, but once we hit retirement age, there's a belief that it's primarily a downhill slide from there. That whatever we have had to contribute to life has largely been contributed, that we have somehow reached our peak, and that the years after retirement age are basically a time of basically defined by diminishment and decline, and a belief that maybe the best we can do is just try to hold on as long as possible to who we have been, to what abilities we have had.
So it's all gripping our old identity as it fades, is that right?
Yeah, holding on to it as tight as possible,
mm-hmm,
hoping not to lose too much at any given point. That is such a disempowering belief, and what we are learning about human development is that while it is indeed the case that we are going to suffer diminishments and declines in certain of our abilities as we age, our elder years can be really the pinnacle of our personal growth, our spiritual growth, our spiritual development. It can be a time of incredible passion and fulfillment and a time of service.
But what if,
the larger community?
And what if people are all crippled up?
If people are all crippled up, then they're not able to be engaged in the same kind of service, for instance, that somebody might be able to be engaged in who's enjoying good health. But if we define our, if we define ourselves and our value and our ability to contribute by how much we can do that is visible and active in the world, then we are missing something really important.
Thank you.
Because I think the goal of human growth is to realize that who we really are is not defined by how much we're able to do or by how physically able we are, but how much we have reached that point where we allow the spirit, the soul, the divine in us to shine through. And whether we have physical abilities to do stuff or whether we have lost those abilities, we have the ability to let joy and love and compassion and true presence be there in whatever we do. And that whatever we do might just be being with family, being with loved ones. It may not be something that's big and visible, but it can make a big difference. I think we all know how when spirit shines through, we touch other people in very meaningful ways.
That's right. That's right. That's a really, really good point, isn't it? And that's the thing that's been lost in this society, is that feeling that as you get older and you're not putting into the gross national product.
Right, right.
You are putting some incredible wealth in there, aren't you?
That's right. And so belief is, the beliefs we hold are so important. And thank goodness a lot of those beliefs are beginning to change these days. I think our work is, you know, one of the many voices that are helping to change our beliefs about what aging can be.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say a word about the next one of those four words I shared, and that is baggage.
That is a big deal.
It is a big deal. And, you know, many of us, I mean, many people are beginning to realize that, you know, with 20, 30 years ahead of me, and if I take good care of myself, you know, a healthy lifestyle, that I can have a pretty good chance of being strong and vital for a long time, and I can have dreams and visions and have a really wonderful time in my life.
And also add more baggage too. I mean, that's the other thing that time gives us.
That's right. The problem is that it doesn't matter how inspiring and wonderful our visions may be for who we can become, if we are carrying a lot of old emotional baggage that is sapping our energy,
right,
sapping our joy, keeping our heart closed or partially closed, if we're carrying that, then our chances of achieving our dreams or our visions are greatly, greatly diminished. And so such a big aspect of conscious eldering work is becoming aware of those parts of who we are, what we carry with us that do not serve us anymore, that may need to be lovingly let go, may need to be healed, may need to somehow be transformed so that the energy that is attached to those can be freed up to allow us to shine and to really move forward into who we can potentially become.
And that requires people to actually see what their baggage is, doesn't it, or to recognize?
Now, it does indeed, and that's why various forms of life review work can be so important. That's why in some cases, you know, there are a lot of ways we can work on themes like forgiveness and transforming, you know, reframing old stories that we carry, transforming regret.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the case that for some of us, we've got some really deep woundings that perhaps we can't work on our own without the assistance of a skilled therapist or coach or counselor or somebody else. And so conscious eldering really, I think, requires being honest enough with ourselves that we can honestly say, these are areas that I really need to do some work if I'm going to move forward, and to be willing to find whatever kind of help we need so that we can indeed move forward.
I think it's really interesting. I was looking, I was reading your book, and the thing that somewhere along the way you said, the hardest forgiveness is of ourselves. And I kind of think I think that that's absolutely right, is that self-forgiveness probably releases us into being able to see the other stuff more easily, don't you think?
I think that is indeed the case. I don't know why self-forgiveness is the hardest thing, but it is for so many people.
Yeah, I see that too.
It takes some courage, and it takes a real commitment to living with an open heart and being willing to touch some of those dark places in ourselves with love. Because ultimately, something like forgiveness of ourselves, forgiveness of another, you know, somehow transforming all kinds of disempowering regrets that many of us carry, ultimately, the healing for that isn't just some psychological process or sitting down someday and making a decision, well, I'm going to forgive this or I'm going to transform that. Ultimately, it has to involve touching those places in ourselves with love. And that love has to come from really committing to living with an open heart. And I know for me, you know, I've had certainly my share of issues with self-forgiveness and forgiveness of others. And what has really changed things for me is that as I have worked over the years to become more conscious and to live with an open heart, I now know what it feels like to have my heart be open.
Isn't that wonderful? Good for you.
And I know how toxic it feels when I get caught up in lack of forgiveness or in some of the regrets and things that I have dealt with over a lot of years. It feels toxic to me at this point to have a closed heart. It just feels terrible, and that has served as a major incentive for me to do the work I've needed to do to clean up and to heal some of these things.
And you do mention
so that my heart can be open and I can feel alive.
That's wonderful.
Pardon?
And you mention in your book how sometimes you'll have a senior person who has so much bitterness and they're so locked into it. And that's very heartbreaking to see, isn't it? But at least we see, well, I know you help people out of that in a tremendous way, don't you?
Well, that's what we do our best to do. And when you get a group of people together on a retreat or a workshop that are all committed to bringing spirit, to bringing the sacred into our work together, some incredible healing can happen that I think it's really hard to happen if we're just doing our own individual work. There is an incredible power that comes from people bringing their energy and their focus and their commitment together to work on healing, on deepening vision, on all this conscious eldering.
Even life review.
That we do. Hmm. Life review.
Mm-hmm.
The conscious eldering work is not something that I believe most people can do successfully alone. It is something that really needs the support of kindred spirits, of others who share our beliefs and understandings and commitment to being all we can be as we age. We need others.
Well, you know, and your fourth category was community, right?
Fourth category is community.
Yes.
You know, we live in a world, Veronica, where with so many disempowering messages about aging all around us, those permeate us. They fill us. They're everywhere. And we human beings are naturally wired to resonate with those around us.
Mm-hmm.
And if all we have around us are people and images and influences that basically disempower us, then there's no way that we can defeat that unless we have others around us, at least a small support community, who can remind us and we can remind them of what is truly possible, of what it can mean like to aim high as we age.
Yeah.
We all need community.
Well, you know something, this is I have a client who's not aged yet. She's 46, but she has a very, very hard life. And I was reading in your book about grief, which is a fascinating subject to me, because just like you say in the book, I believe it's very transformational. But that young woman is locked in it, and she may as well be a senior who's been locked in too long, if you know what I mean. So I was able to use your book to help her see that, or at least a little bit of that. I don't know how far she'll take it, but you know what I mean? The way you talk about unlocking those doors inside doesn't have to only be for seniors, does it?
No, I think everything in my book, Conscious Aging, applies to people at any age. We all can benefit so much by living more consciously,
mm-hmm.
and especially at any of the younger ages when we are in times of transition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, times
mm-hmm.
of transition are when we are most open to the possibility of change, when some of the old structures that we've been locked into naturally tend to break down. And when they break down, then that's when there's a possibility for the light to shine through. And so everything in this book really, I think, is a guidebook to negotiating life transitions. But the particular focus of the book is this big transition into the elder chapters.
Mm-hmm. It's really exciting. So talk more about community. Do you work with your retreats as a community situation, as a community experience, or do you take it into the community as well?
No, the retreats and workshops we offer are held at retreat centers around the country.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the one where we have done most, the largest portion of our work has been at the wonderful Ghost Ranch Retreat Center, made famous by Georgia O'Keeffe in New Mexico.
Oh, wow.
But we bring together groups of 10 to 15 or 16 people, and then there are two of us guiding the retreats. And on our standard Choosing Conscious Elderhood retreat, it is a week-long experience. And we lead people basically through the dynamics of the three phases of transition. And the first part of the retreat focuses very much on looking at who we have been, reviewing our lives, what needs to be healed, what needs to be let go, what wonderful wisdom and gifts have we developed in ourselves that we definitely want to take forward into the next chapter. So the first section focuses on who we have been. Then the middle section, which is highlighted by a day of solitude in nature, is that in-between time that is so important in any life transition, when we're not who we have been, we're not who we are becoming, we are there just open, oftentimes without a roadmap, oftentimes without clarity, just waiting, you know, gestating the seeds of possibility for what can come next.
Mm.
And that is something that in our modern society, there is not much room for waiting.
Well,
we have to know who we are. We have to always have our plans. We always have to be clear on what we're doing. And that in-between time is such an incredible time that needs to be honored and acknowledged.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then the last part of the retreat focuses very much on those seeds of possibility that we're beginning to feel are stirring in us. What's calling us as we move forward? Calling us not just from our heads or from the voices that, you know, the world around us has implanted in us, but what's calling us from our deepest, most authentic guidance within us. What's calling us in terms of our service to the world, in terms of our own growth and our own fulfillment? What does intentionality mean? Because if we're going to age consciously, we have to be aging with intentionality, with focus, with vision, and with goals, and not just kind of drifting into getting old and hoping everything turns out well.
So is one of the goals dying?
One of the goals is to reach a point where when our death does come, we are truly at peace. We can look at our lives in a way that we can honor it as a wonderful journey of growth and fulfillment and service, knowing that we're not carrying a bunch of stuff with us, including a closed heart, knowing that when we are in our deathbed, we can really say, you know, as that Native American phrase that we've all heard so often, this is indeed a good day to die. I am ready.
Mm.
So the goal is to die consciously, to have a really good death when the time is right for that.
Mm. That's really, really important, isn't it? Because I think our whole life is geared up to not dying or being afraid to die, or there's a lot of those questions in there. So I think sometimes being peaceful as you get older has a lot to do with accepting that, hey?
Yeah, and without that kind of acceptance of mortality, for one thing, we as human beings will postpone and postpone and postpone those things that are so important for us to do if we are to truly grow.
Mm-hmm.
Acceptance of mortality, you know, in so many spiritual traditions, there's the wonderful imagery of death as an ally. You know, if you keep death over your shoulder, not in some morbid way, but just remembering that I am mortal and any day could be my last, it adds such a sense of immediacy and almost urgency to live well and to live fully. And I think we live in a world that denies death.
Like it's wrong.
That is definitely not to our benefit at all.
No, I see that. That's pretty interesting. So it's a whole composite picture. How about, have you got any stories of people, because I'm conscious of the fact that if people do this retreat with you, and if they go through this self-awareness and forgiveness, it must have a huge impact on their health.
You mean on their physical health?
Yeah. Physical, mental, emotional, all of the above. Because I was thinking about people's faces when they're bitter. They hold, you know, in certain ways, don't they?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you can read those patterns that can create illness, heart or brain or whatever, you know. So I'm going, you must be able to see a lot of healing going on amongst people.
I think we see incredible healing going on. Now, I can't speak, you know, to physical healing, even though I imagine that for many people, this conscious eldering work and these retreats have very beneficial physical effects. But what I do know is that so many people leave with a smile on their face and a light in their eye, knowing that, my goodness, something else is possible for me. It's possible for me to aim higher than I thought I could. You know, that it is possible to heal some of this stuff I've been carrying forever. There is hope that I can have a really meaningful and fulfilling future. You know, we had a guy on one of our recent retreats who's a therapist from Brazil.
Oh.
And he made the comment at the end of the retreat. He said, you know, he's been a therapist for many years. He said, in this retreat, I saw more healing happen for people than I've often seen when people are in 2 or 3 years of one-on-one therapy.
Wow, that's great.
And I think that that's a testament to what happens, as I said earlier, when you get a group of people together with a strong shared focus who are willing to tap into the power of spirit, however they understand that, and invite that to be present to help with healing and help with vision and help with wholeness. Incredible things happen when you bring people together and you create a powerful energy field that supports things that I think in most cases people can just not do on their own.
So it's like the Jungian
the
way
power
of
community.
And the containment, when you're speaking your truth or your story and it's contained by these others, there's a huge healing there, isn't there?
That's right. When it's contained and when it is witnessed with love.
Yeah.
Because nothing is as healing, I think, of grief. You know, we spoke about grief earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Of anything that needs healing, I don't think there's anything as healing as being able to tell one story, to share one's grief with others who are truly present and who are offering their love.
And don't try to fix it for you.
No, don't try. Just being present with love is the most healing thing that I know of. And a lot of that happens on these week-long retreats. And we also offer weekend workshops, which in a lot of ways are, obviously you can't accomplish on a weekend workshop what you can on a week-long retreat, but you can touch many of those same places and give people a sense of what some of this important inner work
you can get a starter so like. People could trust it, I imagine, hey?
That's right.
If a person comes to that, what would we expect? Would you be doing ceremony? Would you do yoga? Would you do climbing? What would you do?
Well,
not on the weekend, but the
On the week long.
Yeah.
Well,
mm-hmm.
what you would not experience is a sage on the stage lecturing at you for most of the time.
Oh, that's good. We've
very very interactive interactive workshops with a lot of engagement. Now they take place in beautiful retreat center settings that are close to nature, because I think one of the powerful things that supports the work we do is the beautiful power of nature to open hearts and minds. People can accomplish things in nature that you just can't generally accomplish when you are within walls created by human beings. And so we spend a lot of time outdoors, whether it's just meeting as a group, exploring certain themes, or people having a couple hours in the afternoon to go and engage in a certain process, and then in the day of solitude that people spend, you know, with good preparation. And so nature is an important part.
Mm.
We learn a lot from each other. You know, we'll explore themes like forgiveness or working with grief in a way where it's not so much us leaders sharing our pearls of wisdom, even though we do. But we give everybody an opportunity to share their perspectives, their understandings, their experiences with these themes, and we learn a lot from each other. We certainly do have ceremony. I think one powerful example is a ceremony of letting go, where we use fire, the transformative power of fire, for people to place into that fire attitudes or beliefs or ways of being that just will not serve them moving forward. That's a very powerful ceremony for a lot of people. We share a lot of poetry, you know, we as the guides and the participants, because our real goal is to tap those places in us that is not our everyday left brain thinking minds, but those sources of intuition and guidance and creativity within us. And poetry is certainly one wonderful vehicle for helping to open up those parts of ourselves.
Yeah, it touches the soul, doesn't it? Do they write the poetry?
No, the poetry that's shared generally isn't written by the participants. We ask everybody to bring poetry that's meaningful to them, and then we have a lot of poetry that we share, that we've accumulated, that is meaningful to us and to our participants. But it's really kind of neat, Veronica, because every now and then, somebody on one of these retreats who has never written a poem in their life, all of a sudden, at least for that time, becomes a poet.
Hmm.
Some of the poetry that has emerged has been absolutely, absolutely beautiful.
So it's kind of a spontaneous integration of something, I guess, eh?
That's right. That's right.
Wow. And you do some writing of self stories or vignettes or something?
We do, yeah. We have a strong focus on legacy in these retreats. And one of the powerful tools that we use is what we call a legacy letter. And that's where people have an opportunity to spend time, at least beginning, to create a letter for their descendants in which they do their best to communicate the essence of who they have been. What the, you know, they're going to be an ancestor to these descendants.
Mm-hmm.
And so what would you want your descendants to know? What is the essence of you? What would you want them to know about what you have loved, the challenges you have faced, the values that have been important to you, the strengths you have exhibited, the gifts you have given to the world. And writing these can be a wonderful, wonderful way for people to remember who they have been, what the essence of their life has been. And so it's a great gift to descendants who might someday receive these letters. But even, I think, more importantly, it is a wonderful gift to those who are writing these letters as an opportunity to do a kind of life review that most of us don't do.
Mm-hmm.
And on the same topic, another related process we have is we have people do oral history work with each other.
Oh, really? And
yeah,
what is
and
oral
really,
history? Is that just telling about your life? Is that?
Well, oral. I guess oral history is what started me in many ways having aging on my radar screen.
Mm-hmm.
But oral history is where one person asks another meaningful questions about the one who you're asking about their life. And, you know, some oral history, if you just Google oral history, you can find all kinds of resources. Some oral history mostly focuses on biographical events, where you were born, where you went to school, you know, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the kind of oral history we focus on is really looking at those issues of meaning and having people ask each other questions such as, you know, what do you feel are the biggest challenges you ever faced and how did you get through those? What are the gifts you feel you have given to the world? You know, other than your family, who have been the most important influences in your life and why?
Hmm.
What are the values that you have held most dear, and how do you think these values developed? You know, what are weaknesses that perhaps you've struggled with through much of your life, and do you feel that you have indeed overcome them? Do you feel that there are gifts you have to give to the world that you have not given so far, but that you might indeed be able to give as you move into your elder chapters and others? And these kind of questions, people love having an opportunity to respond to these kind of questions that maybe they've never been asked before.
And maybe they come up with
somebody
ideas
truly listening.
Yeah, maybe they come up with ideas they didn't ever know they had.
That's right. That's right.
Mm, that's exciting.
Yeah, and so, you know, we do things like that throughout the retreats and weave them all together in a way that really touches people deeply and opens hearts. And we use music, by the way. We begin every day with a drumming and rattling session.
Oh, wow.
Because as many of your listeners may know who have had any experience with being in a drum group, when you do drumming and rattling together, it shifts consciousness. It builds energy in a group. It creates an energy container that enables many, many things to happen. And it's just a whole lot of fun also, and it brings people alive. And so every day we have drumming and rattling.
And do they dance to it, or do they move to
people
it?
Can dance if they want to. It's mm-hmm. It's pretty free form.
Mm-hmm.
Some people just really get engaged in the drumming and rattling. Other people get up and shake it, you know, and it really feels good.
And they might even laugh. When I think of drumming and rattling, I go, that kind of shakes free some of the stuff that might be stuck in the subconscious, doesn't it? It sort of vibrates it out.
Oh, yeah, it does. And you said they might even laugh. I'll tell you what, if we have a retreat and there's not a whole lot of laughter, then we feel something has been wrong.
So these...
I mean, this is heavy work. This is important, life-altering work. And if it's not joyous, something is missing, because this whole journey of aging and aging consciously has to be one that has a whole lot of joy, or people aren't going to be able to stay on the journey or want to stay on the journey.
Mm-hmm. Do they often come back to these retreats, or do you hear back from people and see what they did with their lives at all?
We hear back from some people.
Mm-hmm.
Some people do come back. We have a gentleman going to be joining us for a third time this fall.
Hmm.
And, you know, they come back not so much for thinking that they'll get a whole lot of different content.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're always growing and finding what we hope are more effective ways to present things.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is that, you know, we have a certain body of content that is meaningful to people. But people come back because each time it's an opportunity to go a little bit deeper into their own inner process, to tap in a little bit more to their inner sense of vision and strength. When you're with a different group, you know, each group has its own dynamic, and
of course.
And you hear different things, you get touched in different ways, and so some people just use this as their yearly spiritual renewal.
I love that. So how I think I read that you have some of these in for example, New Mexico and in British Columbia and all these different places. Where are they? Can you give people a little thumbnail on what that is?
Well, we do two each year at Ghost Ranch Retreat Center near Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Okay.
This year, we just finished one at Brighton Bush Hot Springs Retreat Center up near Portland, Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
We have one scheduled at the Hummingbird Community, a beautiful intentional community near Taos, New Mexico. And we have one the retreat scheduled for Kirkridge Retreat Center in eastern Pennsylvania.
Oh.
And then I got several weekend workshops scheduled in various parts of this country. And if people want to learn, you know, to see our complete schedule and learn about what we're doing, if they go to our website, centerforconscious elderingcom, they can learn all about this work and they can see our complete schedule for this year.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'm really interested in coming, so we'll get in touch with you about that later.
I'd love that.
I would too. And do you think, here's something that's really exciting, a possibility of it being exciting to me and many others. Is it a movement that's really, I don't mean just yours, but you're part of a movement. Is it really moving quickly through, say, the Western world or through the world at this point, or is it moving slowly or what?
You know, when you're enmeshed in something, as I am, sometimes it's hard to get a larger perspective. You know, one can become a bit myopic. But I think that if you look at the large number of books and articles that are appearing these days, the large number of organizations that are in various ways helping to promote a new, more positive vision of aging, the number of conferences. If you look at all of this, you have to believe that there is some kind of a significant shift happening.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as has been the case for the last 40 years, it's the baby boomers who have driven cultural change in so many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And as we all know, and we've all seen the statistics, 10,000 baby boomers a day are reaching the age of 65. So many of the baby boomers who have wanted to remain relevant and engaged and making a difference in the world for 40 years do not want to all of a sudden
lie down
quit
quiet.
Being irrelevant and engaged just because they have hit the age of 65.
Thank you.
And so the baby boomers are driving the quest for new possibilities as we age. And I think, you know, I have a feeling that when you have, you know, if anybody's read Malcolm Gladwell's Tipping Point, you have change is nibbling at the mainstream paradigm from all along the edges in different ways, and you don't realize until it seems to happen almost overnight, and a paradigm shifts in a big way. And I think that that is what's going to happen and what is happening with the way we are viewing aging now.
I love that. That's really exciting. And I'm not a boomer. I'm older than that. But I really agree that when you've got a groundswell like that moving through the culture, things have to change, don't they? They really have to. I was doing some research on conscious commerce today, going from conscious aging to conscious commerce. And that that also, I'm happy to report, is pulsing up underneath the surface of what looks like a pretty destructive sense of capitalism right now. You know, there's a lot of really, really conscious people in the world of commerce. So we got big changes coming up.
You know, there are, and if indeed it is the case that, you know, some people have called these times the Great Turning, and there are other names for huge shift in consciousness that has the potential to be happening now. I believe that is happening, and if that's going to truly transform the world we live in, and human consciousness, it has to be happening in all these different spheres, whether it's commerce, whether it's aging, whether it's politics. It's happening in so many different ways.
It's like waking up, isn't it?
It's waking up. And I believe that conscious elders are absolutely essential if this shift is going to happen.
Well,
because there are so many around the world, and we need to use our gifts and wisdom accumulated over lifetimes. We need that wisdom, and we need that energy, and we need that commitment to help drive this shift. It's not going to happen without conscious elders, I don't think.
No, it isn't. And also, it's not going to happen unless a lot of people invest in their own growth personally, which is what you're helping so many older people do, right?
I think that is indeed the case.
And Dalai Lama said it was going to be the older Western women that really make the difference right now. We love that.
Well, you know, it's interesting that certainly more than half of the people who come to our workshops and retreats, and those of everybody I know, and in fact, who participate in any kind of personal growth or transformation retreats and workshops, the majority always are females. And I wish that it was more 50-50, but women certainly do seem to be driving the changes right now.
But you know this, Ron, that women have had more of the community consciousness because we've had to. That's part of our makeup, isn't it? Because of the children and so on and so forth. So it sort of makes sense. We kind of haul the men in quite often. But you're right in there. You're leading. You're paradigm shifting, mister. That's great.
Yeah. And it often seems kind of strange to me that probably the majority of those whose books and courses and articles and things are most visible tend to be men.
I know.
But the majority of those who read the books and attend the workshops and things tend to be women, and I hope that we get a balance in that.
Well, I think it's interesting because you men have that single focus that we count on, and maybe we'll start working in harmony where we do that whole the broader viewpoint and have our men focus it so, you know, you can pass the message on better. I think there's something about that kind of organic connection, don't you?
Oh, I do. I do indeed.
Yeah, and it makes it more
Veronica,
fun.
There's one other thing I want to make sure that I get back to real briefly,
please.
And that was the fourth of those key words that I said at the beginning, and that was purpose.
Oh,
I think that relates to what we're talking about now.
Mm-hmm. Good for you to remember.
I have interviewed people, physicians, who have studied what makes for healthy longevity around the world. And from so many sources, you hear that the number one factor in terms of healthy longevity is having a sense of purpose as we age. And purpose, when you ask them to define that, they mean a reason to get up in the morning that is bigger than just yourself.
Mm-hmm. And there's no retirement when it comes to purpose. There's no such thing, really.
That's right, because we can always find ways to be of service using our gifts, using our big hearts, using our compassion, no matter what our particular gifts and talents, no matter what our particular situation in terms of our health or our physical abilities, there is always some way that we can be serving others, that we can have a reason to get up in the morning that's just bigger than our own edification. And that is, I think, so much the core of what conscious eldering is. It's living with purpose, with intentionality, aiming much higher than most of us believe we can aim.
Wow, sky's the limit. Well, Ron, yeah. You've been very, very invigorating for a lot of us. I know that. So why don't you give everybody your contact information and remind us about the book, too, which is Conscious Age. No, what is it? Conscious Age.
Yeah, the book is Conscious Living, Conscious Aging.
Yeah, it's very good. Any
it's published
good
by Atria Books, A-T-R-I-A Books, back in October. Mm-hmm. And I do my work through the Center for Conscious Eldering. Yeah, centerforconscious-eldering.com is how people can learn about what we do and about our programs.
Is there actually
learn how
center?
To contact me if they would like to.
Do you have a physical center?
You know, that is something that I would love to have happen at some point. I don't. I mean, I'm headquartered in beautiful Durango, Colorado. Mm-hmm. But our center, rather, is a collaboration of myself and several skilled and passionate colleagues who offer our workshops and retreats around North America. Mm-hmm. And I might add that this last year, the Shift Network asked me to host a big telesummit and a telecourse, and they've asked me to do it again next year. And so that's a way that people can, in this summit, I'll interview 18 of the real leaders in this whole movement to transform the vision of aging.
Wow.
You know, across the whole spectrum of different ways of working.
Mm-hmm.
And then the telecourse is a virtual way of experiencing a lot of what I have to teach. And so if people go to theshiftnetwork.com, you can learn a lot about their wonderful programs. And next March, through them, I'll be offering another one of these summits on aging.
Wow, that's really exciting, and I bet you'll really enjoy that, too. So it's like cyber community on a cutting-edge fashion, isn't it?
It is. Well, when we did it last year, 15,000 people from 120 countries registered for the Shift Summit and listened to some or most of these interviews.
Wow.
Boy, they got exposure to a lot of different viewpoints and understandings and ways of expressing this change. That's
I
happening.
Like that
and
it's around the world.
It's exciting.
I'm so excited. Also, one final thing. I know that we're done, except that I wanted to ask you about facilitators. If somebody wanted to participate and become an assistant or facilitator, what would they do?
Well, our organization, our Center for Conscious Eldering, is small, and so we don't offer some kind of a training or certification program. But for people who would like to facilitate conscious aging workshops and get a good, strong grounding in it and have some organizational backing for getting together groups in their community to offer some of this, the Institute of Noetic Sciences has a really wonderful they call it the Conscious Aging Program. And if you register for that and you pay, I forget, $200, $300.
I think it's $200, yes, I was looking.
You have what I think is a fine self-study course that takes you through a lot of this work, gives you an opportunity to engage in exercises where you relate a lot of this to your own life, and then when you've completed it, you become certified to teach in 8 week, one day a week or one night a week for 8 weeks, conscious aging course developed by the Institute of Noetic Sciences. And they've had 350 people from around the world who are now certified and are getting out in their communities and just getting groups of people together and meeting for 8 weeks and just helping to get people engaged and see the possibilities and get moving on this path. And I think that's pretty exciting.
I love that. It's like Johnny Appleseed. Well, I have to say goodbye to you, Ron Pevney. Pevney or Pevney? What is it?
It's Pevney.
Pevney, yeah. You've been very inspiring, and you're a real paradigm shifter. And I'm very, very excited about having spoken to you. And I'm excited about what everybody else is going to do in response. And everybody will pick up speed, I'm sure.
Well, it's been my pleasure. I've really enjoyed talking with you, Veronica, and I wish you well in your good work, and wish all those who listen to this the vision and the courage to aim high.
Aim high. Thank
aim
you
high.
So much, Ron. This is Veronica Entwistle saying thank you so much for listening to Paradigm Shifters, and you can be in touch with me, veronicaentwistle.com, for your any feedback or suggestions or sessions even with me. So many blessings, and thank you so much.